Hi, Aspen. This is Trisha Taylor. Jim and I wanted to just check in with you to let you know that we at The Leader's Journey have been thinking about you over these last few weeks. We know that things have been hard in a variety of ways, some expected and some not. And we know that right now is particularly challenging for y'all. At the same time, we know that you're looking at the future and that you're figuring things out. And we trust that there are things to be hopeful about, but we also know that it's been a lot. It's been a lot for a while. Someone that I coach just said to me yesterday, I didn't realize that 2022 was just going to be more of 2021. And I think a lot of people are feeling that way, that it's been a lot for y'all just outside the company. And the pandemic is going on 2 years now. We continue to experience some political divides and some social upheaval. And then that on top of all the stuff that's just going on in your real life. And so that's a lot. And then inside the company, there's just this reality that the church, capital C, especially in the West, is changing. And every organization that is adjacent to the church is feeling the effects of that change. And we talked to lots of folks who are experiencing that, and we know that you are, that it's been kind of a roller coaster. It's been really hard to keep things clear, to know what's going on or what's going to happen next. It's hard to know what to do next or what the right thing to do is. And so all of that has been happening. And we also know that y'all have just experienced a lot of recent changes. And losses of revenue, of projects, and even most importantly, of personnel. And some of those changes you knew were coming, and some of them have really been filled with dread and uncertainty. And now that you know what is going to happen, you're all in a position of facing some new realities. And so, in this podcast, we want to talk about two things. What do you do with the loss that comes with change? There's a whole emotional, relational piece there. What do you do with that? And then, how do you adjust to changes that you didn't choose? And so those are the two things we're going to look at. So I want to talk about change for a minute, just to acknowledge that we know change is part of life. We know that it's the way our world is designed. We are constantly changing through the seasons. That's just one of many, many examples about how nothing stays the same. We might want to talk about, well, there's good change and bad change, but the truth is we don't always know which is which while we're in the middle of it. And if you'll think back over your life, I know you can think of examples of that. We know that change is part of life, and at the same time, our brains, our hearts are just wired to resist change. And at the end of the day, it's not so much that we resist change, but it's that we really resist loss. And I want to just take a minute to just think together about what we mean by acknowledging that what we resist, what is really hard for us, is loss. When we think about loss and grief, we also often think about losing a loved one to death. But there are all kinds of losses, and grief shows up in lots of different ways. Over the last 2 years, we have just, some of you have just moved from loss to loss to loss. And that's just how things have been. And it takes its toll. All these kinds of losses, things like we had something and now we don't have that anymore. It may not be a person, it may be something else. It may be a sense of security, or it may be a way of life. But the loss is that we had something and now we don't have that anymore. Or we thought we would have something and now we don't have that thing that we expected to have, that we anticipated having. And when we're in the middle of loss, we often find ourselves saying things like, this can't be real, or things will never be the same, or we can't go back. And that's the nature of grief, I think, is when we become aware that the loss is real and that it can't be fixed, that we can't go back in time. And so we experience grief. Grief is absolutely human. It is universal. We all go through it. It might even be fair to say that we're all going through it at some point or another. And so I want to say something about grief that Jim and I both strongly believe, and that is that grief is the healthy response to loss. I know how tempting it is to say that grief means there's something wrong. You know, that if I were really strong or if I had more faith, that I wouldn't grieve. But, you know, I can make the case, I'm not going to now, but I can make the case that grief is part of God's design, that God created us with the capacity to grieve, that God Himself grieves, and that it is not a sign of weakness and it is not a lack of faith, but it is actually the process that helps us humans move into the future after we experience a loss. And so, if grief is so universal, it is also fairly predictable. There is some combination that we all experience of a certain amount of numbness, sadness, anger, anxiety, and eventually mixed in there somewhere, acceptance and adaptation. And all of those feelings that we experience in grief are valid. We have all come into adulthood with a list of feelings we think of as good feelings and bad feelings. And if we can just set that aside and say that all those feelings have their job to do as we go through a period of loss. So sometimes I just want to go back through that list: numbness, sadness. That sadness can be anything from like a twinge of sadness to deep despair. Anger can be anything from frustration to rage, right? Anxiety can be anything from being a little worried about something all the way to a feeling of panic or desperation. And grief also has with it acceptance. Sometimes we feel grateful. For example, in the midst of our loss, we can feel grateful for blessings that we see, or how our friends and family help walk with us through our grief, or some blessings that might emerge. And the weirdest thing is that we feel all of that at one time. It's not like you feel numb and then you feel sad and then you feel angry and then you feel anxious and then you feel better. That's not how it works. It's more like the agitator of a washing machine. And we can sometimes feel like we're feeling all the feelings at once. And what I want to say is that all the feelings they're all valid. They all have their place. And that is fairly predictable. Almost all humans experience some combination of that in grief. Another thing that is predictable about grief is that it takes time, that we really can't rush it. We have to let it run its course. And at some point, we start to notice that we're in different territory, that it feels a little different, that the future might look a little different. And that just takes time. Another thing that I've alluded to is that what we have to do is to learn to balance all of those feelings that are connected to grief, to learn to balance those with hope and to be able to hold both at the same time. Sometimes I hear people saying, "Well, which is it? You know, am I in grief about the past or am I hopeful for the future?" Well, sometimes maybe it's both. Am I sad about what's happened, or is it that I see possibilities for the future? Well, again, what we have to remember to do is to be able to say, and I can be sad and hopeful. I can be devastated and have things to be grateful about. And so we grieve best, particularly after we're through the first, you know, kind of shock and dismay. We grieve best when we can say, and it's this, and this, and this, and this, rather than thinking that we somehow have to reduce it down to just one thing. The goal of grief, and there is a goal, is that it's how we're designed to come to acceptance of reality and how we're designed to go through a period of grief in order to adapt to a changing future. We know that we're starting to kind of at least cycle through the grief when we get to a place where we can say, okay, I feel all these things, they're all real, they're all valid, and I'm starting to think about what's next. And then I would just add this little piece. that healthy leaders recognize that doing this work of grief and walking with other people through grief and managing all the feelings about the losses that happen in our lives, healthy leaders recognize that that is an important practice of leadership. There's always that temptation to want to clap our hands and say, okay, that's over, now we're moving on. But being able to walk with the people we work with, the people that we lead, and even the people that we follow, through a period of loss and change, and through the grief of that, and just to make space for that, while also looking at a hopeful future, that is important work of leadership. And one of the things I would say is that in one way or another, everyone at Aspen participates in leadership. The good news about grief is that it does eventually end. And the end of grief, this is really important, the end of grief isn't that we're not sad anymore, or that we don't sometimes wish we could go back to the way things were. The end of grief is that we have what we need in order to say, what's next? Where is change taking us? How can we accept that and cooperate with God? How can we help to shape what things will be like tomorrow? Grief is that process that helps us let go so that we can move forward, so that we can live in the present and not that we can value the past without living in the past. And so that's what we wanted you to know about grief and loss. And I hope that that really describes your own experience in your own life that you've already been through in terms of change and how change produces loss and how loss produces grief. I want to add in one more thing, because I think there's often that sense of helplessness that says, yeah, but what if other people made decisions that created my grief? And in particular, what is it that I do when other people make decisions that affect me but don't belong to me? I want to say that again. Other people sometimes make decisions that affect us but don't actually belong to us. And so decisions are made that we might be able to influence, but we might not. Or we might have some say in the decision, but often we don't. And that is true in every relationship in life. But that might be especially true that we feel that sometimes at work, where there is a chain of authority. And so I think it's important for us to just acknowledge how bad that feels, right? Sometimes the most helpful thing we can do is just to acknowledge that something really feels bad. And, you know, we think when we're children and we experience that other people make decisions that affect us, but that we don't have any say over, you know, sometimes we will say to ourselves, when I grow up, And we think, I'll never feel that way again, right? Because it's the grown-ups that are powerful. And when I grow up, I'll be in charge. And when I grow up, I'll do things my way. And yet, when we grow up, we figure out that's not exactly how it works, right? And so we can even feel traumatized when things happen to us that are out of our control. And I think it's important just to know that that is a common and normal feeling. When we are affected by things that happen in life, things that other people choose, or things that nobody chose, but that just happened. But we realize that we don't have any control of them. That can feel traumatic. And also, we understand as adults that this is how life works. And so one thing that we can do when this happens is just to acknowledge that it feels really crummy. And it takes a while to move past it. And we don't have to gloss over that or pretend like that's not true. Another thing we can do, though, in the midst of that is just to accept reality. You know, we really hurt ourselves resisting reality. There are so many times that I've gotten stuck in a place of saying, yes, but this isn't how it should be, but this isn't right, but I don't like this, but this isn't the way that I would have done it, and get so stuck in resisting reality. Looking for whose fault it is, looking for someone to blame, looking for a reason to make it make sense. But all of those just postpone the place that I get to where I will exhaust myself trying to fight reality, or I can accept it. And I want to stop and say acceptance, which is a really deep spiritual practice, acceptance does not mean I like it. It doesn't mean I agree with it. It doesn't mean I would have chosen it, but it does mean that I accept that this is what is. This is what is real. And there's going to be a period of time where we won't accept reality. That's just it. We push back against it. We protest it. But at some point, we do better if we can accept, okay, this is how it is. Given that this is how it is, how am I going to show up? For me, that is the magic question in my life. After I get done protesting, given that this is what is reality, how am I going to show up in this? And so that leads us maybe to think about how we can adjust. I had a mentor once who said that everybody's going to hit the whitewater rapids occasionally, and that when you hit the rapids, you can be a rubber raft or you can be a pontoon boat. And he used to say, be a raft. And I know what he meant. What he was saying was, pontoon boats are great in smooth waters, but when things get fast and choppy, what you want is to be in a rubber raft that can adapt, that can change shape, that can get through the chaos. And so adjusting means finding ways to show up in our reality, to find the ways to live the life that is actually in front of us, and to find ways to do that with curiosity and creativity, and some days just to do it with survival, just to get through it. But sometimes to be able to find some openness and some curiosity about what might be possible and what might be next. And that adjusting is what helps us get through life. And so I have personally really found the Serenity Prayer to be incredibly helpful. This portion is the part that has become, I think, embedded in our culture, that says, God, give me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And there's a reason that that shows up on needlepoint and on pillows and bumper stickers and posters, is because I think we sense that there's a really deep wisdom there. That the serenity to accept what we can't change and the courage to change the things we can leads us to wisdom. What we want to do, what is human, what is natural, is to focus on trying to change the things we can't change, right? We get all that all backwards. So here's an exercise that I do sometimes. You can do it on a piece of paper. That's typically what I do, but you can even just do it in your mind. And what I do is take a piece of paper and I draw a vertical line. And on the left side of the paper, regarding whatever situation or circumstance I've found myself in, I write down all the things I cannot change. And that usually includes some version of other people's decisions, other people's feelings, certain circumstances that have happened. I be as specific as I can. I make a long list. What are all the things in this situation that I cannot change? And then on the right side of the paper, I write down all the things that I can change. And sometimes those are things that I can have influence over. So I name those. Sometimes all I can change is inside me. And I write all that down. And now I've got these two lists. And then I go back prayerfully and I ask God specifically to give me the serenity to accept the things on the list on the left side of the paper. And I ask God to give me courage to really move toward the things that I actually have influence over. And then there at the end, I ask that God will continue to give me the wisdom to know the difference between those two things. And so I offer that to you. It'll be really tempting for you to just say either, well, that's a dumb idea, or to say, oh, that's a great idea, I'll do that some other time. But I want to encourage you, maybe just take that idea, sit with it a while, and just see what might happen if you try that on. Last but not least, I want to encourage you to give yourself and others a particular gift in the middle of all this, in the middle of the stress and the change and the loss. The best gift that you can give yourself and other people in all of this is the gift of compassion. Compassion, okay, I want you to hear this. Compassion is the healthy response to suffering. Okay? to have compassion, not just sympathy, but the ability to actually feel with another person, to be able to see things from their point of view, and to be able to offer grace. So compassion is the healthy response to suffering. Stay with me here. Even if the suffering is our own, and even if we brought it on ourselves. Now, I have a lot to say about that I'm not going to say. But to, in the midst of a time of stress and anxiety, to be able to offer compassion to those around us, compassion for ourselves, compassion for others, sometimes looks like acknowledging that people had really hard decisions to make and had no really good options. Having compassion for our leaders, even having compassion for people who made choices that we wouldn't have made. We may not agree, but we can have compassion for the people who were in the position to make the choice. And we can have compassion for those who are experiencing loss. Some of us get into a situation like this and we actually don't experience a lot of loss. It can be the way we're wired or just how we see the situation, but we're surrounded by people who may be experiencing loss. And so compassion is the healthy response to that. But then also to have compassion for ourselves. And the way I often describe what that looks like is that it looks like treating ourselves like we would treat a friend. Right? So giving ourselves permission to feel what we feel, acknowledging that we may not be feeling 100%, that we may not be able to do all this perfectly, to bring ourselves to a place where we don't get stuck in blame of other people or of ourselves. Compassion for ourselves means treating ourselves, taking care of ourselves, talking to ourselves like we would talk to a friend or like we would treat a friend. And so let me just leave you, Jim and I both would like to leave you with just the encouragement to take that on, to be a person of compassion, curiosity, creativity during this time, even while you give yourself space and permission to grieve. And I just want to end by saying that we have been thinking about all of you by name, and we have prayed for you. And I would just like to leave you with this prayer, this benediction that the Apostle Paul offered for the Thessalonians. And it goes like this. Now may our Lord Jesus Christ himself and God our Father, who loved us and by his grace gave us eternal comfort and a wonderful hope, comfort you and strengthen you in every good thing you do and say. We love Aspen, and we want you to know that we are here. Get in touch with us if you'd like to talk about this further. Set something up with your coach if you have one. Get a coach if you don't, but know that we are in your corner.